You're listening to the Cerberus Podcast with a K, available on Cerberus.com, iTunes, Stitch.com, and Audio Boo.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Christian Corley. This is the Cerberus Podcast with a K. This week we're doing something a little bit different. We have got a recording for you, which was made at the Afternoon with Terence Dix on April 19th, 2015. And what follows is, this is basically the first of a two-part podcast. What follows is Michael Herbert's introduction to Malcolm Hulk's career, which is kind of a pricey summary of his pamphlet, Doctor Who and the Communist. You'll find a link for that in the show notes. We do recommend you buy it. It is just £4. It's a very good read. It's a reference that you can come back to again and again, unlike most magazines at £4. So don't miss out on that. Here's Michael.
Hello.
Hello.
Right. Lovely news. So thank you for coming in on a Sunday afternoon to have a little chat about one of the finest writers of the 60s and 70s. And just to introduce the day, I wonder if I can ask Michael Herbert to just say a couple of words about Malcolm Hulk and the work he's done in researching his work in the excellent People's History Museum.
Working Class Museum,
sorry. I haven't prepared that bit. Anyway, well, Michael will talk much more eloquently than I will, so if you could give him a warm welcome to Michael Herbert, please.
Well, thanks, Gareth. Thanks very much for organising today and allowing me to speak to promote my pamphlet, which is available at the end. My partner, my companion, but my partner, Bernard Hyland, will be selling it at the table behind me. It's a remarkable £4, and thanks to Five Leaves Press. Can you all hear me, by the way?
Yes.
Five Leaves Press for publishing it. Kind of Doctor Who carrier. So I'll just talk briefly about 10 minutes about Malcolm Hulk. I was interested when I came across in our collection at the Working Class Movement Library in the Unity Theatre collection a pamphlet he wrote in 1961 called Here is Drama. And I'll mention what Unity Theatre was in a moment. So Malcolm was born in 1924. I don't have a great deal about his early life, except that he was what used to be known as illegitimate, i.e. his mother was unmarried and there was no father in his life. Something he wrote about in 1973 in an article in The Observer called The Stigma You Can Never Escape. And it sort of says that when he was 21, he decided to track down his father's relatives. It went to a vast St. John's Wood flat who offered me our afternoon tea. The lady I thought was my aunt says, "Well, where do you think you fit into our family?" I explained I was the son of her long dead brother. And she said, "That's quite impossible because my brother died 2 years before then. Do you take sugar?" I never called again. It isn't nice to go around shocking innocent householders. When you're illegitimate, you feel completely alone. We are the totally silent minority. So Malcolm was a member of the Communist Party of Great Britain, which was formed in 1920. I'm not quite sure when he joined and when he left. Again, the archives are quite problematic about that. I can usually find these things out from our archive or other archives. So hopefully John Williams' book, which is coming out later this year, about Malcolm, will perhaps illuminate that. But it was quite a powerful organisation, not in terms of members. I think at its height it was about 60,000 at the end of the war. But it had quite a vibrant cultural life. It had historians, poets, writers and novelists. And Malcolm was involved in the Unity Theatre set up in the 1930s in London. Colin Chambers, who's written the history of the Unity, says that the theatre began with irrepressible determination amid the political struggles of the 1930s against savage cuts. It sounds very familiar. Against savage cuts in state benefits, the imposed means test, the waste of widespread unemployment and poverty, and above all the rise of fascism. And it pioneered sort of direct political commentary on stage and its satires and documentary-based shows. So Malcolm was involved, I think, throughout the 1950s as production manager, and his pamphlet came out in 1961 to mark the 25th anniversary of the theatre. And he writes, when I find it, "Unity is a theatre of ideals, but don't you be too dreamy-eyed in your approach. Only the very mature and the lonely stand the test of time. Some people have even been known to use Unity as a jumping board for West End theatre work. Don't forget, they may do a lot of good for Unity Theatre in the process. Never store up grievances, take them to the management committee. In the final analysis, however, there is only one person who will change and improve Unity Theatre, you. He also stresses that all jobs at Unity can be done and are done equally well and equally badly by women as well as men. So Mac began working with Eric Pace, who was involved in Unity Theatre as well. By the way, Mac didn't write anything for Unity, which is quite puzzling. But he began working with Eric Pace, and they got onto TV, which was developing in the 1950s, an increasing demand for theatre, for sort of drama on TV, particularly after 1955 when ITV got going. And they wrote a number of dramas for Armchair Theatre, a very influential set of dramas pioneered by Sidney Newman, who'd been kind of headhunted by ABC from Canada to produce them. And that gave them an entry into writing drama. And they're not kind of soul-searching kind of dramas, they're often about dramatic incidents. For instance, The Criminals, broadcast in 1958, stars Stanley Baker and Alan Cuthbertson. The plot centres on an escaped convict. This sounds quite familiar, actually. Some plot centres on an escaped convict hiding in a Piccadilly office, having laid plans to break into the strong room of the adjoining bank. He compels four businessmen to assist him in the raid. The Times reviewer noted that the criminal acquires a total moral ascendancy as the other figures reveal their shiftiness, self-interest and roundedness to take a share of the picking if no danger is involved. At the end, the convict is accidentally killed. This one has survived, quite a lot of Armchair Theatre vanished, but that one has survived and been put out on a DVD. So again, Sidney Newman is quite a constant figure, I think, in Mac's writing career. Sidney Newman commissioned Mac and Eric Pace to write a children's fiction serial for ABC, Target Luna, broadcast in April and May 1960. And this might sound quite familiar. Newman's aim was to educate young people about science, so she began to kind of, in some sense, it's almost like a prequel to Doctor Who. It centres on Professor Wedgwood, head of an experimental rocket centre, which launches missions into space from a remote Scottish island, which might have been more believable in the 1950s than it is now. Geoffrey, one of the children involved, was played by Michael Craves, by the way, who later joined the cast of Doctor Who. It was a success, and he was commissioned to produce a number of follow-ups. Pathfinders in Space, Pathfinders to Mars, and Pathfinders to Venus, and these all went out in 1960 and 61, with more emphasis on the science. This is a more ambitious story, announced Pace, with Malcolm adding, "We're steeped in cyanography." The children and the adults, and Hamlet the hamster, travel to the Moon, Mars, and Venus, encountering other perils, lost civilizations, an alien spaceship, hostile lichens, sandstorms, dinosaurs, and Venusians. Mac's connection with Sidney Newman continued when he wrote episodes for the cult TV series The Avengers, which Newman created for ABC in 1961 and ran until 1969. Evolved over the decade from a crime thriller to a stylish fantasy series combining English eccentricity and offbeat plot with elements of swinging London, the main character was John Steed, played with superb panache by Patrick Redney, while his partners in the investigations were in turn Kathy Gale, played by Honor Blackburn, Emma Peel, played by Diana Rigg, and Tara King, played by Linda Thorson. And it's running on True Entertainment on Freeview 61, and they're just revisiting the Emma Peel years. By coincidence, on Friday, they broadcast one that Malcolm Holt wrote called The Gravediggers, which featured a great sort of fight on a small model railway. And Emma was tied to the track, but she escapes at the end. So Mac wrote 9 episodes, and 4 of those were written with a young man by the name of Terence Dix. So I'll just mention briefly Mac's other work. Obviously, we won't be talking about Doctor Who, because that's going to be covered by Gareth and Terence. He was script editor on a series called Spider's Web in the 70s, that's Spider with a Y, which co-starred Anthony Ainley, who later played the Master. Wrote 6 episodes for Crossroads, and in his book, Writing for Television, he explains that to cope with the volume of output required, there was a storyliner and 4 writers. And Reg Watson, who was a producer on Crossroads, says, "Over the years, we covered subjects such as broken marriages, illegitimacy, divorce, malnutrition, mental health, kleptomania, murder, loneliness, and the canals of the Midlands. And Ronald Allen, who appeared in The Ambassadors of Death and The Dominators, was a regular member of the cast in Crossroads. So if you're old enough to like meet, it was just on all the time. So I'll just mention a few things and then I'll finish. Doctor Who novels. De Malcolm contributed to the target range of Doctor Who novels. He wrote 7, 6 of which were based on his own work, and his 7th novel was Doctor Who and the Green Death, based on the serial written by Robert Sloman, which famously featured giant maggots, the product of environmental pollution. The remaining serials, The Ambassadors of Death and The Faceless Ones, were turned into novels by Terrence after Mac's death. And he often sort of changed the story, interestingly, when you read the novels, they aren't just a strange, straight retelling. He wrote a book called Writing for Television, which came out in 1974 originally, and he drew on many years of experience, writing experience, to explain the craft involved, and also give practical advice on the industry, such as the need to get an agent. He naturally encouraged young writers to join the union, the Writers Guild of Great Britain. Included a number of scripts in the work, Writing for Television, not his own, but an extract from the Doctor Who serial Carnival of Monsters, written by one of the other great writers, Robert Holmes, with a comment from Robert in which he says that Doctor Who releases a writer from his normal mental straitjacket. He can, for once, leave the padded cell of reality and fantasize through eternal time and space. It is an enjoyable and refreshing exercise. He was also involved in a writing school. I think Ralph was quite keen to demystify writing and explain that if you've got ideas, you too can become a writer. He was also involved in a writing school in the 70s and sort of was principal of it. Mac's last work was to contribute 6 stories to an anthology, which I've got here. Purnell's Book of Adventures in Space, which came out in 1980. So there were 6 stories in this published after his death. I think it came out in the 1950s. It would have been called The Boys' Book of Adventures in Space, but they're trying to appeal to a wider audience. So they are sort of an interesting, typical kind of Mac's work with a little twist at the end of it. So he died in 1975, very, very young, really. But I think it's interesting that his career spanned some of the sort of early years of TV, the development of the TV drama, and exciting and intriguing storylines, often with a twist. So thanks very much for listening, and I'll pass over to my colleague, Darren.
So thank you to Michael, and thank you to Gareth for organising an afternoon with Terence Dix. Next week on the podcast, you'll be able to hear Terence speaking. Until then, it's goodbye.